on Friday, Ebrahim Patel, the Minister of Trade and Industry and Competition, published a draft policy proposal. These are our plans to combat the trade in stolen scrap metal and people who steal scrap metal, damage infrastructure, costs the economy an enormous amount in lost opportunity, replacement costs, etc. A lot of organized crime elements to it. And every time we talk about it on the radio, there's always going to be a significant number of listeners who will say, ban the export of scrap metal, because that's one of the reasons why people are getting the kinds of prices for it that lead them to take the risks that are involved in getting the scrap metal and putting it through the illegal system. The DA, though, says that the six-month ban, which is one of the proposals in the draft policy paper, is not a great idea. Shadow Minister Matt Cuthbert joins us now. Matt, why not? What is problematic about a six-month ban on the export of scrap metal?
Well, good afternoon, John, and thank you very much for having me on your show. I think the first thing is that, you know, there's a number of special interests competing to try and get the scrap metal industry or export industry banned, because it supplies upstream steel industries with, you know, below-priced scrap that they are able then to turn into goods of their own. They're obviously backed by, you know, millions of rand of development financing, you know, through the RDT and the like. So there's obviously a special interest at play here. The second thing is that you can ban what you like. You would have seen with cigarettes, you would have seen with alcohol during the lockdown. And all it does is further, you know, extend the illicit market and the criminality associated with that. And we don't believe this is necessarily a trade policy problem. We believe it's a crime problem and it should be dealt with as such. And furthermore, we are of the view that this is a very, very, you know, reactive measure by the minister, rather than making sure that all the recommendations that we put to him 2 months ago were costed, reviewed, and then implemented as we suggested.
So, I mean, if there is any reason to believe that putting in the six-month ban, which he says could be extended beyond the six-month period, if there's any evidence-based reason to believe that it would lead to a meaningful reduction in the theft of copper wire, cabling, and so on, with the resultant infrastructural damage, then surely it's something that must be considered. So, I mean, essentially what you must be arguing is that there's no evidence that it is going to, that people will still steal and break as much as they are stealing and breaking at the moment. They will rather sell to locals than to locals who will beneficiate in South Africa rather than to locals who will export.
Sure. So, I mean, if there's evidence to support this, I mean, that's something that we'll definitely consider. But Kenya earlier this year actually instituted a similar ban, and they walked that decision back a couple of months later after they realized that there was no empirical evidence to prove that it had resulted in a decrease in vandalism and theft of public infrastructure. And it also had, you know, huge economic consequences. There's a value chain attached to this particular industry, and measures like this have the potential to put thousands of people out of work. So we need to also take that into consideration, notwithstanding the fact that there are criminals and illicit dealers in scrap metal, and they need to be dealt with from initially a SAPS level and then also by the NPA to make sure that they're prosecuted under the Criminal Matters Amendment Act. But that is something that needs to be dealt with from a law enforcement perspective. And that's where we've been sorely lacking over the last number of years, and this is why our economy has taken such a hit.
Explain the job losses to me, because if the scrap metal is still circulating in the economy rather than being parceled and sent out of the country, wouldn't, you know, where are the job losses if that is the case?
Sure. So you would need demand as well, and obviously export drives a lot of that local demand, so you can't create artificial demand, which is what they are trying to do in the first place. And there's a number of people who obviously rely on making sure that they give it over to metal recyclers who would then export these goods into other international markets. And that lack of demand will have serious implications, not only for these businesses, but also for people who rely on that particular value chain. So what you will see, for example, in some instances, is you have long trucks lining up with scrap outside certain foundries, and they are able to dictate them because of the current regulations and system in place and the lack of demand, you know, when they want to take the scrap, what price they dictate to them, and it obviously creates a very unfair and uncompetitive model for them to compete in.
So then what to do? I have not had a look at the draft policy proposal. I was away without any connectivity over the weekend, and I haven't had time since arriving back to a world with connectivity to look into it. But are there any aspects of it that do get a thumbs up?
Well, I think there's one aspect, and that's, you know, the cashless transactions for scrap metal. I think that's an important element of this particular proposal. And I think it's also important to note that there was a little bit of a mix-up with the actual notification of this call for comment, because it was initially put out as a policy directive rather than as a call for comment. And that would have obviously had serious legal implications. But nonetheless, I think that the cashless element is something that we can welcome. I think there's positive feedback from the formalized metal recycling industry on that front. And then there's also a bit of copy and paste from our own proposal. So that's obviously specialized units, interdepartmental task teams, making sure that they focus on this, allocating sufficient budget. So from that side of things, I think there's definitely some positives, and we can't be entirely dismissive of it. But I think the core premise of their plan is to obviously institute the six-month ban, whether or not there's the necessary evidence, and I think that's what's most concerning.
But something like the cashless, you can't take 3 kilograms of scrap metal and get, I don't know what the ruling price would be, 500 rand in dirty 50 rand notes in return. But it falls on the same hurdle that so many South African policy proposals fall on, which is a lack of implementation. If you have, then maybe the specialized units, Matt, would change the policing of that and make it more likely that a greater number of people involved in the chain will only pay out through digital methods which are more easily traceable and so on.
Sure. So it's got to be multifaceted. I don't think that you can tackle it with one particular approach. And I think this is particularly where the specialized units come in. And they need to obviously be working with people who are in legitimate business in this industry, finding out, exactly where criminals are, using local community structures to find out where these criminals are, what their sources are. Because somebody doesn't just go and pick up a cable theft aside. Somebody doesn't just go and pick up 30 kilometers of Transnet railway, if they're somebody who's an overnight cable thief or illicit dealer and these kinds of things. I mean, this is a serious operation, and, this is the backing of syndicates. So this is organized crime, and it needs to be dealt with as such. And also people in the SAP need to understand what it is that they need to look for in terms of the composition of the metals, how people are moving these goods and the rest of it. And I'll tell you one thing. They're wanting to ban the export of scrap, but what currently happens is there's no tariffs that are necessarily associated with copper billets. A lot of the stuff is then melted by tabletop furnace owners who go and melt the stuff down, hide it in furniture and all the rest of it in containers, and then ship it off to India and to other countries that these kinds of goods are exported. So they still circumvent the system in place. And there's no saying that this ban will necessarily prevent that from happening.
Matt Cuthbert, thank you very much for talking to us. Shadow Deputy Minister of Trade and Industry with the Democratic Alliance.